We'll call the Senate Special Committee on Rail Belt Energy System to order Friday. It's about 3 minutes after nine. Today we have Senator Giesel with us, Senator Machicki, Senator Schauer, Senator Gray Jackson, and myself, Senator Coghill. We have with us Kerry Cooper-Ryder and Brett Collins, who will be helping us on the teleconferencing. Last time we met, we brought up a CS version K before us, and I had objected to it, and then we lost our quorum. So at this point, what I'd like to do is remove my objection to the adoption of that bill so that we have that as our document before us. Is there any other objection to doing that? All right. With that, we have then the K version, which is 31 LS 0959, dated 2010, 2020. Today, I'm going to have Rena Miller come forward to discuss some additional language that has been suggested. And as you all know, this is a work in progress, how to get the utilities and make sure that we get the form in place, but we don't inadvertently impact people that should not be impacted. So we're going to do that. And then the intention is to go ahead and have public testimony today. But I wanted Rena to go through the things that we had seen and we'll be proposing to get in early next week to another, probably either amendments, probably amendments would be my guess. Or we could probably have it drawn into a CS. It all depends on our drafters, I think, at this point. So welcome to the committee, all, and thank you. We have several people signed up for testimony already, so I'm glad that they're here so they can listen to you go through what we have for new suggestions. Rena, put yourself on the record and go ahead and introduce yourself and what we have before us.
Thank you, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rena Miller, staff to Senator Giesel and on loan to the special committee on the Rail Belt Electric System. As you said, Mr. Chairman, we circulated the committee substitute, the work draft K, among the stakeholders. We received great feedback, some suggested changes that will help keep things very clear. We worked with the RCA to kind of add some clarity and definitions and process, and have incorporated most of those proposed changes. The chair is having drafted and intends to offer via amendments or a CS to be determined with our drafter the following. These provisions relate to process. So we'll add a specific provision that all the load-serving entities in a system that has an electric reliability organization, including those entities exempt from rate regulation, are subject to the tariff that the ERO has on file with the commission.
Just for those, this is one of the first times we've had the camera in here. Maybe, if you don't mind, I'll just back up a little bit. I think probably for a couple of senators here, The four parts of this bill are we're requiring the establishment of a ERO, which is an electric reliability organization, the structure of that. If it's not voluntarily formed, it will be mandatorily formed. We are requiring integrated resource planning within this this group called the ERO, Electric Reliability. And then the other major part is we're dealing with pre-approval of facilities, electric distribution facilities. And then the fourth thing is we're creating a timeline for those to be implemented. Based on that, we have worked with people who are impacted by the reliability organization called the Rail Belt and those who will not be in it. And so we're dealing with some of those special things. And in terms of art, as you said, so I think just to bring everybody up to speed and for those listening in, because you jumped right in the middle of a topic that I thought, yeah, we better frame it. Okay, you're back up, Rena. Thank you.
Oh, thank you, Mr. Chairman, for the framing. So at the utility's suggestion, we'll also tweak a provision that right now says that a standard may not be designed for the purposes of requiring enlargement of facilities. They would prefer, and the RCA agreed that we should change that to say that a standard may result in enlargement, but may not be designed specifically to require enlargement. At the utility's suggestion and with the RCA's support, will modify the provision that says that the RCA's regulations related to a reliability organization may provide for an open access transmission tariff. Instead, the amendment or CS would require that the RCA's regulations require that the ERO's tariff include a standard for non-discriminatory open access transmission and interconnection. It will also require that a reliability organization's tariff include provisions for transmission system cost recovery. And then
allowing access and the way to pay for it. That's simple.
Yes, Mr. Chair. And again, at the utility suggestion and the RCA's too, we went a little too far in the CS version K on the process that the RCA will use to handle standards that the reliability organization files with them for approval. The RCA has an existing process in AS4205-391 as to when they can simply reject a filing, and they can reject it for form and content, based form and filing. Was it filed properly type of thing? Does it include the necessary components? They can't reject it just because they don't like it. And so we're going to just turn to 391 by default and take out the specific word in this bill that says they can reject it. In the same process, we required in the bill that the RCA would give public notice and hold a hearing to approve a filing. If the RCA is approving a filing, a public hearing is not something they would typically do for a tariff provision. They would hold a hearing if there's potentially interveners that object to it once it's been noticed that it's been filed. So we'll take out the requirement that they hold a hearing. If they're simply going to approve the filing that was put before them. They will still have to issue notice to stakeholders and to the public that has been filed and that there's a period of time for them to weigh in. And we did have some questions from utilities. There was a concern that reading the bill plain language, each standard, you know, maybe has to be filed individually for approval. Talking with the RCA, no, much like any other tariff provision in their tariff process, you can file a lump of these together for approval. You can file them one-on-one for approval. That'll be dealt with in the RCA regulations. The next changes relate to eligibility, I guess, or application, who this is going to apply to. We've talked a little bit about how we're planning on some degree for an unknown future statewide, not having, you know, a too specific and narrow legislation as far as applicability goes. So on the RCA's suggestion, we'll include a provision that a given network that is not required to have an ERO because they don't meet that definition of a bulk power system might choose that they want to have an ERO. And in that case, they can ask the RCA to let them have an ERO and be certificated by the RCA. We're also working on refining an exemption for a group of technically a system, but one where all the entities within it are municipally owned or all political subdivisions of the state. The Southeast Alaska Power Association, down a little south of here, is an example. This is not intended to rope them in when they have that oversight as municipal entities. We are working to polish that up. We are also working on an exemption from pre-approval only related to the Sweetheart Lake Hydro Project. Here in Juneau that would potentially serve some of the mines. This project got its FERC authorization and went through federal permitting environmental review processes, got that authorization in 2016, is still working on actually getting the project done. We want to make sure that this doesn't rope them into that in some context, the requirement for pre-approval. Finally, in the definition section, we're going to specify that a load-serving entity, to be a load-serving entity, you need to have at least 10 customers that you're distributing end-use power to kind of clarify what we're looking at in terms of this load-serving entity. And we are going to retool a little bit the connected definitions for an interconnected bulk electric system and an interconnected energy transmission network. These work together in the bill, and the RCA recommended some refining of those definitions to make things real clear and prevent any potential ambiguity there. That's all I have, Mr. Chairman.
Thank you.
Two questions.
I think Senator Machicki would like to ask a question or two. Senator Machicki?
So under the old bill, we didn't disallow an ERO for a network that isn't in a bulk system. Well, at least I don't feel that we did. Did you, was that the impression, or do you just want to clarify that if load-serving entities want an ERO in a network that isn't in a bulk system, that they could certainly create one? I mean, I guess my read of this is that any load-serving entities would still have that ability.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, I think I'd like to go through and really review some of the language to make sure I'm answering your question well.
Okay.
It was a recommendation from the RCA that we're not, if we describe in the bill that a certain type of system has to have an ERO, and if you're not that type of system, there was a desire to make it clear that if you still wanted one, though, and come talk to us, we can make that happen.
Okay.
That we weren't being exclusive simply because we weren't inclusive.
Yeah,
I will follow up directly with you after I've reviewed that in a little bit more detail.
Yeah, I think clarification is always good. I don't think we disallowed that in this bill. I think we just required it for the rail belt load-serving entities. And then the other question is, on your number six, on this letter about reworking requirements that RC regs allow for, so previously we were requiring the commission to adopt regulations, and the change would be to allow for regulations on that list of items, including provisions for cost recovery. Is that correct?
Senator Machicki, through the chair, on page 5 at the bottom, line 29, subsection Q, it says that the RCA shall adopt regulations related to some things, and the regulations will say that they must require that within an ERO's tariff there are, let me find the right words here, that the tariff must provide for non-discriminatory open access transmission and interconnection. So it is becoming more of an explicit must and shall situation. And again, this was a recommendation by the utilities, and the RCA was supportive of it, which they can certainly build upon in their invited testimony today.
Thank you. So currently in the bill, it says may allow for the issuance of an open access tariff, and the request is for requiring that RCA to have a tariff as well as provisions for cost recovery. So the others, the cost recovery was a must. It was a must for identifying and resolving conflicts, and it was a may provide for the issuance of an open access tariff, and the request is for that to also be a must.
Senator Machicki, through the chair, for it to be a must, but also to change that a little bit, so it's not specifically an open access transmission tariff, but that it is standards that would require the non-discriminatory open access and interconnections. A little bit of subtlety is whether or not that's precisely a tariff or not.
Mm-hmm.
That's for the utilities and the RCA to kind of work out in regulation exactly what those standards would look like to accomplish the same sort of goal. And then you're, I believe, referencing number 3 there, where the regulations must allow a reliability organization to recover its costs through surcharges. But up on that same new one related to the open access transmission and interconnection, we would also add that the reliability organization's tariff needs to include provisions for transmission system cost recovery, and that would relate a little bit more to the open access transmission and interconnection aspect. So we would not be changing 3, but 1 we would be splitting into, in a sense, 2 requirements.
Right, Mr. Chairman, I understood it that way. We're starting to sort of subtly cross into the how to do it versus what to do in that particular section. I'm okay with that, but That just may be something noting as we work through the final aspects of this bill.
Very well taken. Other questions at this point? What I'd like to do is go ahead and get, we have a whole range of stakeholders who are calling in, and I'd like to give them ample opportunity for public testimony. The one that's been on the phone the longest at this point is Homer Electric, Larry Jorgensen. So we can start there. Larry, do you want to, I'm sorry.
It is.
Before we go there, we'll take a brief. It is. I have a question that with my staff wants to talk about. All right, we'll come off a brief. It is for a second. So I did misspeak, which wouldn't be the first time. I understand that we had asked the organizational development team to speak up first, and I think. We have Brian Hickey, I think, was going to lead the charge on that. All right. Brian, so my apologies for kicking off on the wrong direction already, just as a start. But please put yourself on the record and give us your testimony. Thank you.
Good morning, Mr. Chairman and committee members. My name is Brian Hickey. I'm with Chugach Electric Association. I'm speaking on behalf of the organizational development team today. Larry Jorgensen will also be speaking on behalf of the team. The organizational development team represents the six Rail Belt utilities, and we would like to take the opportunity to thank you and your staff for your efforts and leadership in drafting and moving SB 123 forward. And we'd also like to take the opportunity to recognize the efforts that are ongoing in the House of Representatives to conform HB 151 and move it along as well. We appreciate the effort that's been taken to recognize some of our concerns. Today, I'm going to speak to one concern that was not that is not put forth in the amendments that have been proposed so far, and I believe Larry will speak to another. the utilities proposed to the RCA that the RCA be directed to develop a standard and regulation that will give additional weight or due consideration to conclusions of an integrated resource plan when the process undertaken by the ERO to develop that plan has been open, transparent, inclusive of all stakeholders and to the general public. The additional weight and consideration would be given by the commission in determining whether or not to suspend that petition for approval into an investigative hearing. Our vision of the ERO is it's modeled somewhat after similar organizations in the lower 48. One is the Electric Reliability Council of Texas, that's known as ERCOT, and there are other entities in lower 48 and in North America of a similar nature. We envision the development, the IRP development process for the ERO as being an open, transparent, and inclusive process. It takes into account the views of all the stakeholders as well as general public. A process of this nature I think necessarily will be, it will involve public meetings, data and input gathering throughout the region in an iterative process, and necessarily all of that will be lengthy and costly. We believe that the result of such an open, inclusive, transparent process should be presumed to be in the public interest and should not be subjected to an investigative hearing, subsequent intervention by stakeholders, and a lengthy and costly adjudicatory hearing, unless it's evident to the commission that on their face the conclusions drawn by this document are not just, reasonable, or in the public interest. Giving additional weight or deference to the technical decisions of a stakeholder-governed entity is a concept that is found among commissions and governing similar organizations in the lower 48. I could draw your attention to an example in the ERCOT region. It can be found in Chapter 2 of the Substantive Rules Applicable to Electric Service Providers, Subchapter E3AI, where the Texas Public Utility Commission gives great weight to conclusions justifying transmission line construction in their region if it's been performed by the Electric Reliability Council of Texas. And there are other examples in those rules and others. Therefore, we have proposed that Section D, page 7 of the committee substitute be amended to include an instruction to the RCA to develop in regulation a recognition of the process undertaken by the ERO to develop the IRP, and that the IRP and its conclusions be given due consideration, given the degree to which the IRP's development process was open, transparent, and inclusive of stakeholders and general public. And now Larry Jorgensen is going to speak to issues around grandfathering, and I'll pass the mic to him.
Okay, thanks, Brian. After Larry gets on, I think we can do some clarification on what we thought we would do on the very issue you brought forward. So, Larry, welcome to the committee. Put yourself on the record and give your testimony.
Mr. Chairman, I'm Larry Jorgensen, the Director of Power Fuels and Dispatch for Homer Electric Association. I want to thank the chair, the committee, and the staffers that have listened to us and been willing to address the concerns of the Rail Belt on Senate Bill 123. I'm here today as a member of the Organizational Development Team, or ODT, to comment on project pre-approval as described in Senate Bill 123, Committee Substitute Version K, page 8, line 5, section D4. Our concern is with the time period from the present until a fully developed and approved integrated resource plan is in place. Utilities that are currently in process with capital projects are left with the uncertainty of a pre-approval process that could be applied midstream of a project. I have two examples from my own utility, Homer Electric Association. First is our Grant Lake Hydro Project. We have spent over 10 years working to obtain a FERC license, which was granted to us in August of last year. This FERC license has a very specific time frame attached for a variety of activities such as mitigation plans, final engineering, and construction. Anything that disrupts or alters our ability to meet the FERC license schedule will put our FERC license at risk. Second is our Battery Energy Storage System Project, or BESS for short. Our Board of Directors approved this BESS project last year. We have secured contracts, spent significant funds, and made large commitments for this project. Both of these projects represent significant investment of time and resources for Homer Electric Association. HEA and the Railbelt Utilities are not seeking language that subverts the pre-approval process, but language that allows for projects that are underway to be completed without increased risk of delays or additional costs. Thank you for allowing me to provide this comment on Senate Bill 123, and this concludes the testimony of the ODT.
Thank you very much, Larry. Rena, we had addressed at least the first topic brought up by Mr. Hickey for the planning. There was some language that we had put forward. Are you able to bring that up at this point?
I'm happy to, Mr. Chairman. For the record, Rena Miller. Mr. Chairman, this is to the utility's desire to add specific language requiring the RCA to give due weight to the process that the IRP, or Integrated Resource Plan, was undertaken in developing. Come up earlier as a concern of the utilities. I believe everyone had seen that. The discussions, Mr. Chairman, that we had were that it's difficult to require a behavior, the spirit in which something is undertaken. The organizational development team that the utilities have, they're working on their MOU in place on how they're going to prepare an entity to be the applicant, to be an ERO. Right now they've, as you're hearing, have a desire to have a very open and transparent process that involves a lot of stakeholders in this integrated resource plan, and I believe that's supported by folks. In the bill, early on, when we talk about what a prospective ERO needs to demonstrate to the RCA in order to be certified, we include that the RCA will need to see that the ERO applicant has got rules that are going to provide for opportunities for public comment, for due process, for openness and balance of interest in exercising its duties. I believe in working with the RCA, they would like to see that, I'm sorry, collecting my thought a little bit there. They understand the concern to provide due weight, but the process may not the process used may not be a due weight consideration in light of other issues that come up within the IRP and their issues for approval. On page 6, line 26, you did add in version K that the RCA must review the process used to develop the integrated resource plan in considering whether or not to approve this plan and in considering whether or not to require modifications to this plan. And I believe, Mr. Chairman, that you felt that was a partway step that encouraged the RCA, actually requires them to actually look at the process that was used, and that was a sufficient
What we were trying
forward.
To do is find that balance to the committee members and to those on testimony was given as much authority to the reliability organization and its plan, but the final authority ends up, it has to be, the public interest has to be finally decided by the RCA. RCA has some input into it in the early stages, but the ERO, the reliability organization and their plan needs to stand as much authority as it can, and I think this is the intention of our language at this point. So I think we've answered it. We'll let that language settle in a little bit. It's both on page 5 and 6 where we're talking about the organization and its plan. So we tried to address that, and we'll see how that language looks to those. And by the way, we do have one of the commissioners from the Regulatory Commission of Alaska online for questions, so just for your information. We do have a whole lineup of people to testify, but I wanted to bring those two issues up because they are critical. Rena, you were going to bring one other thing up?
Mr. Chairman, if you would like, related to the second concern about not requiring pre-approval for projects that have board approval, the committee also has heard from different stakeholders on this. You heard from the utilities, you heard from others that potentially, I believe the words used were, creates a hole big enough to drive a Mack truck through if simply projects approved by a board are not subject to pre-approval. So there was language added in this K work draft on page 8, lines 5 through 6, that say that the regulations that the RCA writes related to project pre-approval needs to address projects undertaken before an integrated resource plan approval for an interconnected bulk electric system. There's different potential stages of undertaken. Is it board approval? Is it undertaken with a certain level of financial engagement, a certain percentage of total costs, certain contracts signed? Is it that you've actually sanctioned the project and are proceeding on it? That was something, Mr. Chairman, that I believe you felt was best left to the RCA and the utilities working together on regulations to define rather than trying to be explicit about in statute.
Right. The commission knows both whether the CPN requires, which we won't know as we put it in here, and what the various different municipals or electric organizations will bring, notwithstanding what an ERO brings forward. So it's not as simple as just one thing. So at this point, I would leave it with the RCA, who will bring them all to the table and make that discussion based on both economics and anticipated planning. So anyway, that was ours. Senator Machicki, you had your hand up a minute ago.
Yeah, I did. I just, in both issues that were brought up before us, I think I understand Mr. Hickey's concerns, and I have not had the opportunity to review the ERCOT model in detail. Perhaps Rena has.
I think there's some information that our own RCA could give mm-hmm. us on that, because they have studied the ERCOT model. Just for your information.
But back to the second concern, I think there almost needs to be a blend, because frankly, when you think about how advanced the Grant Lake and the BESS project are as we move through this process, I think there's interest from other utilities on the rail belt for both the costs and benefits of those projects. So we need to have a transition from projects that are in process as we move toward an ERO, where the ERO may want to share in both the costs and the benefits of those projects. I'm not sure how you do that. That's not as simple. We don't want to interrupt the current process that's not only pre-approved but well-developed, but the entire ERO may want to participate in those projects as they go forward. So how do you blend those considerations? And that will be
what we
something
did.
Worth discussing.
That's true, but what we did was we are going to put a process for an ERO to be put in place and a way for the RCA to look at those things that have been put in motion before the ERO was brought up. So I think that's well described in this bill. So that's just my opinion, but as we move forward, I am going to go I'm going to skip around a little bit here, and I want to thank everybody for being online. We have quite a lineup. Right now I'd like to go to Chris Rose, who also is online, who is one of the stakeholders with the Renewable Energy Group. So, Chris, are you able to join us, put yourself online, and give us your testimony?
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. My name is Chris Rose. I'm the Executive Director of Renewable Energy Alaska Project, or REAP, and as the committee knows, we have testified on this bill before in support of it, and I would like to testify in support of both version K and the proposed amendments that Ms. Miller brought up this morning. We believe that those are good amendments and clarify the bill and also make some important substantive changes, particularly when it comes to the requirement that the tariff of the ERO require information about interconnection standards, non-discriminatory interconnection standards, and also find a way to develop a way to share the cost of new transmission. Well, not new transmission, but the transmission system. So we believe that is a good amendment. I'd like to address the two proposed ideas that came up from Mr. Hickey and Mr. Jorgensen, and I guess I would take them in order. First, regarding the question that Mr. Hickey brought up, this is something that we have been aware that the utilities have wanted for some time, and we do not support that amendment that the ODT is putting forth. We believe that the situation in ERCOT and in Texas is quite different. The ERCOT board is a different kind of board than we're proposing the utilities are proposing in their MOU. As I've testified before, we believe that while this board, this governing structure that's outlined in the MOU, is getting closer to the representation that we need to have. It's not exactly what we would have suggested if we had the leverage to have a little bit more public participation on the board. So we don't believe that it's the same kind of board that you see in Texas, where you might have one entity that represents investor-owned utilities and one entity that represents co-ops and so on. And instead, we have market participants that would be on this board that all have their own interests. So we do not support the idea that the just because that there might be a process that the ERO has taken, that necessarily means that the RCA's authority to modify the integrated resource planning or integrated resource plan should be subverted in any way. We are very, very clear that we want the RCA to be the final backstop to support the public interest, and we believe that the language that has already been offered in the bill mentioned on page 6 from about lines 24 down to line 29 is a compromise from what the utilities had asked for, and it still allows for a back and forth process between the RCA and the ERO. We don't want to see the ERO necessarily have the kind of deference that it may have in other jurisdictions when it is a brand new entity. It's also important to point out that in Texas, ERCOT's been around for quite some time, and that electric reliability organization has evolved quite considerably over time and has earned the trust of the commission in a way that I don't think a brand new entity is necessarily going to have, particularly one that has six utilities plus another entity, the Alaska Energy Authority, that would be considered a utility if it weren't a state entity. So regarding Mr. Hickey's proposed amendment, we would not support that. Regarding what Mr. Jorgens put forth, we also believe that the language that is in version K deals with the concern. That's the language on page 8, lines 5 and 6. And as Ms. Miller pointed out, there are so many different nuances to what a project in process might mean. And there's a huge range of in process that we could define, and we think that's much better left to the rulemaking process that everyone would be able to be involved in. And certainly there are some projects, as Mr. Jorgen pointed out, like Grant Lake, that have a longer history and certainly would be treated in the rulemaking process, I believe, differently than an idea that may have just come up at a board meeting of one of the co-ops. So there's a range there that we think can be addressed by the language that's been inserted into version K. So, again, we really appreciate all the work that the committees, both on the House and Senate side, are putting into this bill. Thank you very much for the opportunity to testify, and I'm available to answer any questions.
Thank you, Mr. Rose. The chair had to step out for another committee for a moment. Thank you for your testimony. Any questions for Mr. Rose? Not seeing any, we're going to move to Mr. Kraft in Fairbanks. Mike, are you there? Mike, you may be on mute. We're not hearing you.
Good morning. Can you hear me now, sir?
Yes, we can.
Okay, this is Mike Kraft. I live in Fairbanks, and I want to thank you guys for all the hard work you're doing down there on this. This is very important for the state. And I wanted to echo Chris's comments for the most part, but I also want to go back to the letter that was received by the RCA, I think a day ago or so, from the six utilities, where they talked about changing the word may in line 1 of page 6, section 1 and 2, where they talk about must provide for non-discriminatory open access transmission and interconnection requirements. That is a very, very important word, must. And one of the problems that's been going on for the last 15 years that I've been involved in trying to develop projects on the rail belt grid is discriminatory practices by utilities relating to interconnection and open access. And it really has been the hurdle, so to speak, for a lot of projects that could have come online. If this language had been out there, I think it would have helped a lot of projects come online sooner. And I certainly think that by changing the word may to must provide for non-discriminatory open access, because I think that's kind of what we've been talking about for the last dozen years. As far as opening the entire rail grid to the potential of private capital investment. So I just wanted to point that out to you guys, and I agree with the utilities' request and the RCA's request that be changed to must provide. And that concludes my testimony. If there's any questions.
Mike, thank you very much. This is Senator Coghill. My apologies. I had to step out for a moment to another committee. So thank you for taking time to testify and all your hard work. We're going to go next to Tony Izzo with Matanuska Electric. Tony, are you there? Can you hear us? Put yourself on the record. Give us your testimony.
Yes, Chairman Coghill. I want to thank you, the committee, and your staff for the work on this. I think this is I would characterize this as an overdue but historic change for the better. In regards to just the energy industry and the rail belt, I really appreciate the committee's openness and efforts to balance the needs of of multiple parties. My testimony today is simply to express my support of passage of the bill. Very satisfied with version K and the amendments that were presented. Thank you so much.
Tony, thank you very much. Next, we're going to go to Ketchikan, to Trey Atkinson. Trey, can you hear us? And please put yourself on the record if you can. Give us your testimony.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and members of the committee. Good morning. My name is Trey Atkinson, Chief Executive Officer of the Southeast Alaska Power Agency, also known as SEPA. We are a joint action agency of the state of Alaska created pursuant to Alaska statutes providing wholesale power to the municipalities, utilities of Ketchikan, Wrangell, and Petersburg. Thank you for the opportunity to provide comment on SB 123. SEPA urges that the committee support amending SB 123 to include clarifying language that will remove uncertainty regarding the bill's applicability to municipalities and political subdivisions of the state. Minor changes to the existing bill will simplify interpretation for future generations and avoid unintended consequences with respect to potential inclusion of utilities that are not economically regulated by the RCA or connected in any way to the rail belt. I would like to thank Chairman Coghill and Senate President Giesel for their efforts in working with us to craft an appropriate solution. We look forward to seeing the final language of the bill and believe Work Draft K moves toward addressing our concerns. I would also like to take this opportunity to thank the entire committee for their consideration in this matter. That concludes my testimony.
Thank you, Trey, and we will continue making sure that that language is refined. I'm going to go to the room now to Duff Mitchell, who's been patiently waiting in the room. And so, and then after that, we will go to Lou Florence of Doyon.
Thank you, Mr. Chair and the committee. I would just like to start off by saying happy Valentine's Day. I think, you know, there's a lot of interest in a lot of different groups related around this bill, and in the spirit of loving your neighbor and spreading goodwill, I appreciate the adaptiveness, the reflectiveness, and the responsiveness on staff and on the committee members of taking the varied interests from a lot of people and trying to craft something really good for our state. I'm here testifying on APA, although I am the managing director of Juno Hydropower. We provided a commitment that we support the bill.
Before you go further, tell us what the acronym is.
You bet. Thank you, Mr. Chairman. APA stands for the Alaska Independent Power Producers Association. We have members across the state that are what you would call non-utility generators. And we also have actual members, but we try to represent even those that are really small that aren't dues-paying members. So we try to respect their interests. What I was saying is we provided a commitment earlier on this bill. We continue to provide the commitment on this bill, and we look to resolving the issues that have been presented in a positive manner, and we see us getting there. And I know there's still a little bit more work to do, but I just want to say thank you very much, and that concludes my testimony.
Thank you for your input as well. I appreciate it. In fact, for all concerned, this is not just a committee bill. This is an Alaska Works bill for trying to figure out how to keep our electrons flowing and manage what we've grown into is a place where we just have to work together. We got no choice now, and this is just a best way, I think, of moving forward. I think appreciate your work on this stuff. Thank you. We're going to go to Lou Florence in Fairbanks with Doyon Utilities, who also deals with power issues.
Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, good morning. Are you hearing me?
Yes,
all right?
Very well. Put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
Thank you. My name is Lou Florence, and I am president of Doyon Utilities, providing this morning comments on Senate Bill 123 to the Special Committee on the Rail Belt Electrical System. Thank you for the opportunity to address the committee. Let me briefly give you just a little bit by way of background on Doyon Utilities. We operate the utility systems for all of the Army's installation infrastructure in Alaska. We have 12 separate utility systems across three installations, including electrical distribution systems at Fort Wainwright, Fort Greeley, and the Fort Richardson portion of Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson. We operate a cogen plant up at Fort Wainwright that has 18 megawatts of capacity and a landfill gas plant down at Joint Base Elmendorf-Richardson of 7.5 megawatts of capacity. We're directly connected in a couple of spots to the bulk electrical system. Doyon Utilities serves over 36,000 soldiers, airmen, their families, DOD civilians. In terms of total plant and service, we are Alaska's fourth largest utility. We own and operate utilities regulated by the RCA, but we are unique in that we are paid by a single ratepayer, the Department of Defense. As a significant stakeholder, we've been following this legislation with great interest, and we certainly applaud the legislature's and your committee's efforts to establish and enforce reliability standards for electric utilities across the state, particularly for cybersecurity protection of the electric grid. Protecting our military infrastructure is a significant part of our mandate, and recent years have seen adversaries specifically targeting utility information technology and operations technology networks around the world. As an electric utility, this legislation appears to require our participation, and by extension, the military we serve. We have two concerns with the course the legislation seems to be taking. First, under our contract with the military, we're required to meet reliability and security standards directed by the Department of Defense. If the Electric Reliability Organization requires stricter standards or standards that are more lenient, we don't have a problem with that. We would generally adopt the stricter standards. However, were the Electric Reliability Organization to adopt standards that conflict with DOD requirements, we would have a dilemma. We might request a waiver from the RCA, but the commission would naturally be reluctant to grant a waiver to something required by statute. For that reason, where the statute requires mandatory participation or compliance, we believe a good cause exemption provision should be included in the legislation. Second, it appears to us that the recently established Rail Belt Reliability Council could potentially be adopted as the electric reliability organization required under this legislation. The memorandum of understanding developed by the six Rail Belt utilities contains provisions that meet most, if not all, of the requirements established by this legislation. We have participated with the Rail Belt utilities recently in identifying and establishing standards for cybersecurity, and they're doing very good work. However, the Rail Belt Reliability Council composition, as outlined in the memorandum of understanding, would exclude Doyon Utilities, as well as other major electricity producers in the interior, such as the University of Alaska Fairbanks and Eielson Air Force Base, from having a defined seat on the council. As the electric utility for thousands of servicemen and women, and the electric utility mandated to provide safe, reliable service on these Army installations, we have an obligation to protect their interests. Since we will be subject to the requirements of this legislation and the ERO, we believe it appropriate that we have an equal voice and vote along with other regulated utilities. Where the legislation mandates participation, but not equal participation by electric utilities, we believe a clarification should be included. I'd like to thank the legislature and this committee and staff for your commitment to protecting and improving electric reliability in Alaska. And we at Doyon Utilities look forward to assisting with that effort.
Lou, I thank you for your testimony. It's a little bit of a new wrinkle to me, so could you forward to my office any suggested language that you're thinking about? And I think that we have tried at this point to accommodate that issue, so we'll see if our thinking is lining up with your thinking, basically.
I'd be happy to do that, Mr. Chairman. Thanks for the opportunity. We'll do that promptly.
Thank you. We have Verdi Severo, if I got that right, Verdi, with the Alaska Public Interest Group in Anchorage, online to testify as well. Verdi, please put yourself on the record and give us your testimony.
To the chair and to the committee, good morning, and thank you for the invitation. My name is Verdi Severo. That's V-E-R-I, last name D-I, space S-U-V-E-R-O. I'm the executive director of the Alaska Public Interest Research Group, or APIRG, established in 1974 as a consumer interest and public interest advocate. We've been following this bill quite closely and are excited to see the changes that happened about or that were announced in the past week. I am not an expert technically, so I can't speak to any sort of technical issues, but on the consumer side, I think what is so exciting about this electric reliability organization being stood up and the RCA having pre-approval or citing pre-approval or whatever the technical word is that this needs to happen and everyone needs to be at the table. And so I'm really excited to see this effort continue. I would say, though, that the Regulatory Commission, in the same vein as, you know, telling saying what to do but not how to do it, the Regulatory Commission is the natural partner in this work for being the backstop to all decisions that the ERO puts forth. And so the idea of due weight to AFPERG is a little bit in conflict with the mandate between the Rail Belt Reliability Council, as defined by MOU, does not have the same objective as the RCA. They're closely aligned, but the Regulatory Commission's mission is to serve the public's interest. And so having the RCA have final say over integrated resource planning and the ability to set that process as they see most benefits the public, we would strongly urge this committee to not include language with due weight included in it, as there should be the assumption that if there is an ERO stood up, there will be weight given to all of the plans that have been made. But the Regulatory Commission should not basically have their hands tied before they even get around to approving and creating all of the other rules that they will naturally have to create. The second thing I just wanted to quickly address is that the concern that Larry Jorgensen brought up this morning is covered already in page 8, lines 5 to 6, allowing the RCA to deal with that issue through the regulatory process. I'd also support the amendments proposed by Ms. Miller this morning, as I said at the beginning, and again, really appreciate all of the committee's work on this. So thank you.
Verdi, thank you very much for your time and testimony. Just to let people know, we've had Homer Electric, Andy Patrick online is listening, and John Burns from Golden Valley, just to let you know that people are paying attention to what's being said and the testimony involved. We also have Anthony Scott from the Regulatory Commission. You've heard a few times the Regulatory Commission brought up. Anthony, is there anything that you wanted to add at this point, or were you just here for questions only?
I just would like to make a couple of comments, if I may.
Please do. Put yourself on the record, though.
Thank you very much. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, my name is Anthony Scott. I'm a commissioner with the Regulatory Commission of Alaska. I want to thank you again for all of your hard work. The bill is continuing to improve. I absolutely agree and echo the comments of Mr. Izzo that this bill is both overdue and historic and will make things better as we move forward in the rail belt. I wanted to mention that I have been working with the committee's staff, Rena Miller, on just discussing a number of suggested changes and how to incorporate them. I want to report that on Wednesday, the commission held a public meeting, and the commission unanimously endorsed version K, supported it moving forward. I wanted you to be aware of that.
Thank you.
I would like to, we also support the suggested technical changes that Ms. Miller spoke of. I would like, if I may, to answer issues that Senator Michiki raised or questions that he raised regarding whether it was necessary to expressly include a provision that would allow an otherwise exempt network to form an ERO. An ERO, we believe it would be helpful for the following reason. An ERO under our statute is not something which normally is something that we could certificate. This bill, SB 123, provides a lot of clarity, version K, under the circumstances in which we can and shall. It does not explicitly call out, though, that in a circumstance where it's not required, nevertheless, it could be certificated. And because it's been a lot of work to get to this point to clarify the relationship between an ERO that could be certificated and then thus subject to regulatory commission jurisdiction, it strikes us at planning for the future so as not to create difficulties in the unlikely event, and we think it's unlikely, but in the unlikely event that in the future some currently exempt network wanted to form an ERO, this just provides real statutory clarity that that indeed could be done. On the may to must provisions, I want to echo something that Mr. Brian Hickey explained to us at our public meeting on Wednesday about their suggestion for the changes. Again, this is on lines 1 and 2 of page 6 of the bill. The language at lines 1 and 2 at present leave open or tend to suggest that the ERO might have operational control or authority under an open access transmission tariff. And as I understand it, the intent is to clarify that, in fact, an ERO would promulgate tariff provisions that would apply to open access transmission and interconnection, but the actual operation of that the transmission would not fall under the ERO's ambit. And the rationale for doing that is that the ERO is meant to enforce its standards, and if it is also operating under those standards, you're having the entity that is responsible for enforcement enforcing itself, its own operation. And that struck people as an inappropriate conflict, and it's something that we agree with. The issue of calling out the issue of how cost recovery happens or that it needs to be articulated how it would happen. I think I'm pleased to see that there's utility consensus around creating a clear public forum for addressing how that shall be done and working through that. As I said in my first testimony in front of you, this addresses the business model problem that the RCA recognized in 2015 and would go a long ways towards ensuring that providing a new business model by which transmission infrastructure that is needed by the system can indeed be built. Mr. Chairman, members of the committee, this concludes my testimony. Thank you again very much for the opportunity to speak today, and thank you for your hard work.
Before you go, I have one question, probably clarifying from Senator Michiki, if you don't mind. Senator Michiki?
Yeah, thank you, Mr. Scott. Thanks for your comments. I appreciate you addressing a specific concern of mine, but I have one other, and I notice in the testimony today It almost seems like a, people keep pointing out on the project pre-approval for addressing projects undertaken on line 5 and 6 on page 8 as though they are comfortable with that. I'm not sure I am, but I would like on the record your interpretation of what that means. So if I had a project or two that I had spent many millions of dollars in advance of this consideration and we move into an ERO, I would be concerned that project pre-approval could interrupt that flow. What would the RCA, what would your interpretation be of lines 5 and 6 on page 8? Can you tell me that if I had been in relatively advanced stages of planning in advance and had spent a significant amount of money, that your, and I'm not asking you in specific detail, I'm asking you about your interpretation of that line. I feel like the line is lacking some clarity and definition, but I'd like to know how you feel about line 5 and 6 on page 8.
Senator Machiki, through the chair, I'm comfortable with the subsection 4 that you pointed to on page 8. The concern, of course, is that the RCA would somehow act irrationally and do something foolish and unreasonable. I trust our processes, and I have to trust that we are going to be reasonable under the circumstances. We will need to have regulations addressing these circumstances. When we promulgate regulations, we take public comment, and so we will absolutely be listening to and responding to parties' valid needs and concerns about ensuring that something that really needs to go forward and represents large irrevocable commitments and are well on the way can indeed do so.
Mr. Chairman.
Senator Machiki.
Very briefly, I did not use the words, to be clear for the record, foolish and irresponsible. You did. Or unreasonable. You did. That was not a consideration of mine. You know, when you have a brand new process, sometimes people may want to start with sort of a clean slate and therefore discount previous efforts. And I appreciate that on the record you made it clear that the RCA would likely not intervene in something that had been considered that far in advance of this effort. And that's what I was looking for. I appreciate that very much.
And you know, just from you, as we were putting this together, the regulatory process has stakeholders not only given public comment, but they can in most powerful terms, make their case. So with that, we're going to end the public testimony today. I'm not going to close public testimony entirely because we will have some drafting changes before us, whether they're by amendment or by CS, dependent on our drafters. Thanks, everybody, for testifying. As you can see, this is not only dense, but it's getting pretty close to historic. We have created a systemic approach that I think that is what we want to do, and we're trying to stay out of the how, but every once in a while we have to say who is in and who may or may not be in. I think we've been getting into those nuances. People are being protected for the investments they've already made and are encouraged to make new investments for a broader scale with this structure. So for all involved, I thank you for all the input, and certainly for Rena, who gets to have the cross currents of all the information coming at her. I am very grateful. And so with that, we're going to hold this bill over. We'll bring whatever new language before our next meeting is Monday at 9 o'clock in the Fahrenkamp room. And so with that, we're going to adjourn this meeting at 8 minutes after 10.